Jake, I'm gonna ask one of my things is about like bringing snacks and stuff for D&D. Do we have like a funny food or drink story?
There was the one time that one of us, well, all of us, kind of, my older sister brought in some homegrown fresh peppers. You remember that?
I do, yeah.
Oh
They were
boy.
like
Yeah,
garden
there are garden
jalapenos, right?
jalapenos. Well, if anyone knows anything about some garden jalapenos, is that the red ones are overripened, which means that they are hot as fuck. And one of our players was handed she had him in like a little ramekin, and she handed the ramekin to him, and he went, "Oh, I love jalapenos." And she went, "Oh, you should eat this one. It's the most delicious one," or something. And I was like, "No, don't, please." And he ate it, and I have never seen someone crumples so fast. He was sweating and coughing, and he's driving.
Dude,
I
he turned
just
red so fast and just became just a blubbering mess
he was
so
nothing.
fast.
He still refers to my older sister as Pepper Witch sometimes,
Oh, that's awesome.
and
I guess we do have kind of a funny food thing. All right, here's my question. In the same onus. In the same bonus? What is that? That's not even a word.
don't know what the
Bonus is like
fuck you're talking about.
responsibility. I think I read that off the story
I have to
earlier.
Google this. Onus? How did you.
Onus means like responsibility. Like if it's your onus, it's in the story is why I'm gonna read it. That's why it was in my brain.
Is it spelled
I meant
ONIS?
ONUS. I meant
ONIS.
like it's in the same realm or vein. But my brain was
What
like, yeah, just use that word that's on your
the fuck?
screen.
You were so off.
What does Otis mean?
You used to refer to something that is one's duty or responsibility.
That's what I just said. That's what I just said.
No, I
I
meant
said
like
it means respond.
when you said it, like the context you said it in, not like.
Oh yeah, no. My brain just took a word that was near my eyes and just said, "We'll use this." That's why I corrected myself
Use this and
instantly.
I'll sound really smart.
Sit or not. In the same vein or in the same realm is what I was trying to say. Was this story from I Am Lixie?
I am
How
Lixie,
do
thank you.
hosts. I am Lixie, thank you. How do hosts, DMs in parentheses, handle food and drink at your place? Just curious what you do for food and drink at your place when DMing. The short of it is, I have five adult players, 3 sessions in, and my bill for providing food and drink is close to over $250. We're all
Oh.
professionals, making a solid amount of money a year, so it's not like we're young teenagers or students who aren't able to work. Is it appropriate to get a beer and pizza fund together or something of the sort? How do you broach that subject? Or is the onus on the host to provide for everyone? That is how you use that word.
Yes.
Playing D&D for 20 years, and I always either brought my own food or drink, or the DM provided coffee, and we eventually started to starve, so we ordered pizza. Any thoughts on addressing this, or am I just being a cheapskate?
I think that's very valid
It's
to.
kind of a funny question, but honestly, like super relevant for anybody that plays. Like,
Yeah, I mean, everyone feels a financial struggle. We're not all away from that.
right?
Excuse me, I'm drinking root beer. I've got some burps
You're
going on.
always you did that last episode. I thought about it the other day. I was like, I got to tell Jake not to drink root beer on this episode so he's not burping the
Listen,
whole time.
man. This shit's so yummy. It is so delicious. I can't stop
An
myself.
audio medium. Nobody wants to listen to you burp, man. It's at its.
I look away from the mic. I just have to excuse myself afterwards.
Please continue.
I drink like one root beer a week. It just so happens to be when we
This is the one?
record. Yeah.
You're like, you know, the
This
only
is the
time I'm gonna drink the one root beer is when I'm about to record myself speak for an extended period of time.
Listen, man, you gotta enjoy yourself somehow.
I guess so.
Anyways, we all go through, financial struggles, or even if you're not going through financial struggles, like you're trying to save money for stuff, and like right now, and I think for the foreseeable future, we will be playing any TTRPG at my house. And
yeah, you have a good setup.
The only thing that I would say, like, that I'm providing for you guys is drinks. Like, I stock my little mini fridge down where we play with a bunch of drinks.
Yeah.
And if you guys want food, that's on your own damn selves.
Yeah, we've never really had, like, a system for it, which I don't think is a bad idea, especially the less comfortable you are with your group. Because obviously, if you're, like, really close with some friends, like, you guys can figure out
how you want to split something. It's really easy to be like, hey, if you guys chip in $10, I can whip up some good food or something.
Yeah, or a pizza. Or, like, a lot of times for us, if someone else is getting food beforehand, like, they're going through a fast food place, they'll be like, hey, send me your orders. I'm going through this place, and, you know, you can Venmo me or send me the money, whatever, later. But
I do think
if you're less comfortable with them, I think it would make sense to have a system.
I think this is a very generational issue, though. Like, my parents' generation, let's say, if my mom and dad were to be hosting D&D, which they would never... but either way, if they would feed their guests. That's how their generation kind of grew up. Is you're in my house, so I will feed you. But generation is not really hardwired like that. Because we're kind of more laid back, and a lot of Gen Z doesn't cook. I'm not one of those. I love cooking. Yeah. And I have cooked a number of times for our sessions.
True.
But, like, you don't need to make something extravagant. I made a pot of chili and bought hot dogs, and we had chili dogs one time. Like,
and they were delicious.
Yeah, that's like all you
need to
do. I
have a very kind of opposite feeling about this, actually. I think that this goes two ways for me. The DM should not provide food, period.
Okay.
I think the DM has enough on their plate. No pun intended. You know, they have to prep the game. They have to, you know, potentially build the world, or at least prep for their adventure. You know, learn the entire system, and or, you know, kind of freshen themselves. Like, you know, like, I spend a lot of my week, you know, prepping for the session coming up on Saturday. You know, and some of it is like actually time at my computer writing and adding things, you know, to my doc, and you know, researching, you know, items or monster stat blocks or encounters, stuff like that. But a lot of it is also just like this mental energy of like, when I'm at work, I'm always thinking about D&D. I'm thinking about how that, you know, villain's gonna talk, or how that encounter might go, or, you know, what could happen if the players do this. And so I think the DM has done enough that I think that the DM should not have to provide food. I think they are bringing something to the session already. I also think that the person who's hosting should not have to provide food, because they're also providing something for the session. They're providing their house, their apartment, their space. Sometimes that's the same person. Like, for a long time, we played at my house and I was the DM, and I definitely felt no pressure to feed you guys.
Nope.
So I think, you know, if you're a player and all you're bringing to a session is just, you know, your character, you know, your laptop, and just a good attitude, which is a kind of good handful of things that players should be bringing. But I think if that's all you're bringing, I think that you should bring some snacks or a case of pop. You know, it doesn't have to be all on one person. If one player brings a case of pop and one player brings, you know, two bags of chips, you know, whatever, like, that's pretty good. Obviously, you know, and then food after that, you can all, you know, split a pizza order or something like that. But I really believe that the DM and whoever's hosting should not be expected to also provide drinks and snacks and food.
Yeah, I have a little bit of the hosting. I should provide something for my for my people, which is why I make sure my mini fridge is stocked with drink. Yeah. Absolutely loaded with mostly root beer, to be honest.
Well, yeah, it's popular.
Shit's good, man.
It's good, especially when you're recording a podcast. It's different.
Hey, I've burped several times, and have you heard me one time?
No,
didn't think so. But yeah, I mean, I kind of feel like I should maybe provide like at least waters. I've bought a case of bottled water. Yeah. There's a bunch of water down here. There's root beer and stuff in my fridge, and there's some like smaller snacks. But other than that, like, I'm not. Like every once in a while, I'll make something. Lacey likes to cook treats and stuff for you guys, so Lacey's my girlfriend.
Lacey being your girlfriend, and like that situation in itself is like if you have someone that you know likes to cook, likes to provide you know snacks, things like that, then that's great, and that works out for everybody. You know, and if you love to cook, if you're the DM and you're hosting and you want to cook something for your players and you just love doing it, like more power to you. I'm just trying to share the load a little bit.
I guess my kind of point of view is I don't expect anything from anyone.
That's fair.
I expect when you come to play D&D at my house, I expect you to be respectful and be in a somewhat decent mood.
come in with a good attitude, for sure.
We're here to have fun.
Other than that, like,
bring a smile on your face.
And it definitely like depends on the week. Some weeks I roll up and I've got bags of chips for everybody. Mm-hmm. I got snacks. I got whatever. And other times I have a bag of fast food just for myself.
Yep.
And usually an Uncrustable stuffed in my backpack that I also eat. That's one of my biggest hacks for D&D snacks is I have Uncrustables in the freezer, and before I leave, I stuff one in my backpack, and then about halfway through the session, it's like hot out and ready to go, and it's the boost I need to get to the rest of the session. But I think that is a good mindset. You shouldn't expect really anyone to provide food, as you know, that is a responsibility of your group to figure out how you want to do that, but. I do think, you know, your DM's doing a lot for you. The person providing their house is doing, or place, space is doing a lot for you. Mm-hmm. And so if you're not making sure the space is clean, you're just a player, you should. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you should bring some snackies for people.
Yeah. And I mean, I stick by what I said that I think this is more of a generational thing. I think the person that said this might be a millennial or they could be Gen X, I guess. Mostly because they bring up like beer and pizza, and have you seen any of the statistics regarding alcohol in Gen Z? Drastically dropped between Gen Z and millennials. It's like down like 50% or something. So it's having beer in your fridge.
Are we Gen Z?
We are Gen Z. Yeah,
we're Gen Z. I mean, I don't drink.
Yeah, you
don't
drink. I don't drink.
So we're both Gen Z, and we both don't drink. So honestly, I that makes sense. We're proving the statistic.
Alcohol is expensive. That's one reason.
Yeah, that's true.
Alcohol is super expensive, and most of it tastes yucky. So
it tastes yucky anytime. And like, and I'm not holier than thou. If you like to drink, get smashed, man. Mm-hmm. I you know, more power to you. I just anytime I have an alcoholic beverage, kind of wish I had a root beer to go back to our drink of choice. I just kind of wish that I had a pop instead, and so that's my own thing.
I'm not gonna really put anyone down for drinking. I just think that beer is gross.
It's yucky.
It smells bad. It doesn't taste good. The only thing that I can like put down and not feel really terrible about afterwards is like whiskey.
Not me.
But even that's like really expensive, so I don't want to.
Yeah, I think if you feel like your group needs a little bit more of a defined system, if you want to figure out how to get some snacks, I think, you know, have someone that is comfortable, you know, making the trip to the gas station or the food place or whatever, or however they want to do it beforehand, whether they're hosting or, you know, just arriving as a player or whatever, whoever would be comfortable doing it, and just have like a food or snack fund, you know, you know, players can chip in and, you know, Venmo or give some cash to whoever's the kind of runner for the groceries or the snacks or the fast food or whatever. And before the session, they can take a look at the, you know, fund, the fast food fund, you know, maybe they have it in their notes or whatever. And they look at the, you know, how much cash they have. And if it's $10 and they go get a 2-liter and a bag of chips and it's like, hey, this is all we got. The fund's running low. You know, or if
you guys got some extra money and they get some, be everyone's fucking fault.
Yeah. Or it's like, yeah, it's like our fund, is, we don't have any money in our fund, so there's no snacks this time. That sucks. Or people have chipped in. Maybe you got a good amount of money in there. You get a couple large pizzas. You get, a, you know, whatever. Yeah. I think that could be a fun way of like, then it's not any one person's fault. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there could, things could arise with that of maybe other people are contributing more or someone isn't contributing at all, but they're reaping the rewards. But I mean, that's, you know, again, like it's your group. You got to be able to hash that out and have some conversations. And I just thought I'd throw an idea out there for something a little bit more rigid.
Yeah. What is this? What is this person on Reddit?
That was I am Lixies.
I am Lixies. I'm talking directly to you. Your bill for the month was $200 and something. You should not feel bad asking them for a fucking 50 every once in a while, especially if you've been doing that for a long time. Don't feel bad. Like, in context, you're spending 20, what would that be? Almost 20?
Three sessions.
Or three sessions a month, or?
He just said over three sessions, like $80.
Yeah, even if you only do like $80, is that what you said?
Yeah, he said $250 over three sessions.
Oh, $250 like over 80, three sessions. Yeah. 83.33. But like if you do 15 sessions a year, you're spending $1,200 on beer and pizza for your friends. They can throw some a little bit your way.
Yeah, no, you definitely shouldn't feel bad for asking, especially if you've provided like that. And yeah, and that's just, that's a responsibility that, that you have as a group of people that get together, you know? Anybody else hosting any other kind of function would have to do the same thing. They'd have to figure out how they're going to get food and how that's funded. So that's just part of the gig. And whatever is most comfortable and most fun for your group. Like I said, our group's pretty, you know, fly by the seat of your pants. Sometimes we have hella snacks. Sometimes
nothing.
We don't got that many snacks. You know, we got water.
Sometimes it's like, but, I hope this single drop of water will be enough to fill your starving bellies.
I hope we wrap up this encounter so I can go get Taco Bell. I'm starving. We've been playing for 4 hours.
Crunchwrap Supreme would fill my aching joints with the nutrition they need.
It's like that sometimes.
My eyeball. All right, what do you got?
What's wrong with your eye?
I just poked it with my glasses like an idiot.
don't do that, man.
I'm sorry. Why am I apologizing? Go this fuck one... yourself.
Oh, sorry. shouldn't have come at you like that. This one is interesting. I'm very curious to see what you think about this, especially because I think our group is very much on one side of this debate. Okay. This comes from Reddit user Companion Species.
Love you, Companion Species.
Companion Species. He says, or they say, I think a lot of DMs asking questions here, well, this is on the subreddit DM Academy, could stand to be reminded that players can't really trick them or cheese encounters if the DM just allows the rules as written. I came across a post and it felt like...
I believe in you.
Sorry. I'm gonna start. Let me take it from the top.
It's okay.
I came across a post, and it felt like felt like to me a lot. It's the problem. See, he wrote, and it felt like me to a lot of scenarios. So see, I was trying to read it as written because I don't want to.
Yeah.
I don't want to like flourish on people's you know posts. I don't want to you know take them to say something that they didn't say. So I was trying to read it as written, but that's just a grammatical error. So
I'm not cutting any of this.
Let me. That's fine. Let me do a little flourish here. Let me help him out.
Okay, yeah, help him out.
I came across a post, and it felt like to me, a lot of scenarios we read about here go like this. My player did X thing that trivialized an encounter or tricked me somehow. I let them do it because they said they could. They got excited about it and told me they were just going to start doing X thing every time we play and break the game. How do I prevent this? Note, I did not have them roll initiative. I didn't make NPCs roll to resist anything. You must follow the rule of cool. We didn't read the rules, and I let them make a vibes-based call on how the spell is used or how it works. They kind of shouted me down when they were being sore winners about it. So he's imitating someone someone making a post like this. He says, while I understand occasionally bending the rules or fudging a die roll to let the party score a real photo finish hit on a big boss, these posts make me wonder what level of Calvin ball some people are playing with the rules in their games. Maybe I'm also lucky in who I've found to play this game with, that I really have no need or urge to entertain the need to cheese. I'm certainly not the first to say it, so maybe this is just venting. Almost all these kinds of problems would be solved by simply reading the rules. 5e isn't perfect, but the people who make it aren't stupid, and they wouldn't design a game where most of these kinds of game-breaking strategies are viable. Mm-hmm. Things like any combat should take place in initiative, NPCs get opportunities to act and react, persuasion isn't mind control, or a spell's description says what it does are among the first things one should learn when DMing.
Yep.
I also wonder how much this phenomenon has to do with the rise of actual play shows, where players at home want to fast forward to their big critical role or D20 moment without owning or reading a rulebook. That seems harsh. I know this game's genre is heroic fantasy, more or less. Part of the draw is that PCs are almost always on the road to be the strongest beings in the world, but that doesn't mean the world just rolls over and dies the second the party says so. If I had a party that wanted that, I might just switch to something less crunchy, something that requires less preparation and math, something that lets my players narrate mowing down goblins and pulling drive-by shootings on the main boss of the entire campaign with almost no preparation from me. All right, this is a little...
First of all, might I introduce you to the Powered by the Apocalypse system?
You're so right. Those are narrative-based. But I think within his parameters, this was a little dramatic, a little inflammatory, maybe.
No, it's funny.
But I do think he's correct in saying a lot of people say, my players trivialized this combat or boss or puzzle. You know, what do I do? And what if they do it every single time now? And that typically what has happened is the DM or the players misunderstood a spell or a rule or allowed something for the rule of cool, like you said.
Empowered.
And it breaks it, right?
Yeah.
That's a real scenario that definitely happens.
Yes. And then if you do it differently later, they're going to be mad because you didn't do it differently the one time.
Right. It's like, well, it worked this one time. It ruled it differently. And obviously our group, we strive for rules as written, but they can be vague, they can be confusing, and sometimes someone's interpretation of a rule is different than somebody else's, and we allow a little bit of discussion back and forth on how we think something works, and the DM gets the final call and says, you know, yeah, I think that works, or no, I don't think it works like that. But it is very challenging as a DM if you feel like they've discovered something broken. Mm-hmm. And this person, I don't usually read the comments, but I think this person summed it up so well. This is the top comment is from Jeffrey Peterson. Jeffrey Peterson says, it's also good to remember that this is a cooperative game and the goal is for everyone to have fun. If some aspect of the game, either a mistake by the DM or an exploit by the players, makes the game less fun, just step back for a minute and tell all the people at the table to work together to fix it. It's completely fine to say, hey everybody, I don't know if I made a mistake or you guys are all just really clever, but going forward, we aren't going to use this particular move anymore because it's going to mess up all my encounters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think
that's a pretty mature...
Yeah, I think that's super mature. And... then that doesn't like put the blame on anyone. It doesn't matter if the DM misunderstood something, if the players misunderstood something or anything, or if it was a really clever thing that, you know, whatever. It fixes the problem. It, you know, gets you moving forward. It lets the cool thing happen, but also by saying, hey, next time, you know, it's not really going to work like that. Which is great.
I think that this is definitely system by system issue. A lot more rules heavy systems are definitely, you're gonna find little things like that a player might exploit, or a dungeon master will rule on bad, because the rules are so crunchy and expansive that you don't want to just stop in the middle of your session and go look up how something works. I think a really good example of it is like a persuasion check in.
Let me stop you for just a second, though.
Okay.
I do think it is okay, very okay, as the DM, if something's going on, to say, let me take a second to look this up in the book, or look this up online, or let me just take a second to read this over to make sure. I do think that it is very okay to stop a session
if it's something to make sure of something. Don't think that you can make a good decision on. Yeah, stop for a second and either look in the rule book, or I mean, I've pulled out the search in a Reddit post to see what someone else has handled something before. So I mean, don't beat yourself up if you ever have to do that.
Yeah, no, I think that's totally fine to look something up and say, hey, just give me a second here to look this up to make sure I'm doing this right, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, what I was going. Persuasion isn't mind control.
You said persuasion isn't mind control. That is a big one, because a bard, let's say, who jack of all trades bard, D&D 5e,
expertise and persuasion.
You get expertise and persuasion. You also get half expertise in literally everything. So you likely don't have any negatives. You roll a persuasion and your charisma is a +5. And you have that, you get like a +10, and then at some point you can't roll below a 10, so you're just always rolling a 20. There's like, if they're going in and they're being like, I'm gonna persuade the BBEG to switch sides, and I'm gonna and then you even if they give like a somewhat convincing argument for why they're, and they roll decent, there's a ton of things that could happen that might fuck that up somehow.
If you have a BBG who's, you know, dead set on destroying the world, and some bard comes in and says, don't destroy the world, it'd be really bad for us, and then rolls a 37 on persuasion, the BBG isn't going to be like, oh, you're so right. I've been so mean, so evil. I'm going to turn a new leaf. Like, maybe there is a moment where the BBG
shows some, you know, self-reflection
for a second. Humanity, or the player does, you know, connect with them on some level right as the BBG kind of, you know, snaps out of it and, you know, like, down on like some idea and, you know, gets back to the fight. Maybe the players get a surprise round. They get an extra round of combat or something.
A great example of the bad guy showing weakness is Thanos when he has to throw Gamora off of the thing. Like, for a second, he gets told that he has to sacrifice, and you see the shot is long. He stops for a second because he knows what he is going to have to do, but he considers not doing it for a second. And that, I think, is what you could rule like a good persuasion check towards your BBG, is that like consideration, like a little moment of humanity. But then that, like, swap to, no, this is, I'm too far in, this is what I have to do.
Right. Yeah, you don't have to, they don't have to just lay it all down over a high roll. And that goes for any kind of check, any kind of, you know, high, you know, really high roll, you know, same thing with
a stealth roll.
A wizard that has a really high arcana check, or a rogue that has an incredibly high stealth roll.
A really high stealth roll does not put them in the clear at all times. A really high stealth roll might make them overly confident, and then they don't check traps.
Right, yeah, there's a lot of other things other than just... But yeah, they're not, like, just invisible because they rolled a, you know, close to 30 on a stealth. It's a great roll, you know, don't get me wrong. But it doesn't, you know... There are DCs that are 30, you know, or higher. You know, sneaking around in like an incredibly well lit room with security cameras and guards that are patrolling and, you know, things like that. Like, you add layers and, you know, like, you can't, you know, a stealth roll is not going to just fix all your problems. And you don't have to, you know, fudge those high, you know, DCs. You know, you can just, you know, explain to your players all the things that are kind of working against them in this moment, and why, you know, something would be so difficult. Even if they have, you know, those ridiculously high checks, there can be a lot of other complications, like you said.
Yeah. And then they're talking about, towards the beginning, mentioned like, oh, they keep outsmarting me. There's 3, 4, 5 players. They are going to think of things you didn't think of that are going to essentially like dismantle or break something that you have. But yeah, as
they're going to catch you by surprise.
They're going to catch you by surprise quite frequently.
Yeah.
But as a DM, you rule on that, and there are definitely ways that they can catch you by surprise. And then what does the BBG do? Oh, you've caught the BBG. You've figured out what his master plan is. Oh, the fucking power word kill me. You know, like, what's the most evil thing they could do at that moment? You know,
maybe their plan is falling apart at the seams. Maybe the players have been so clever and they have figured it all out, and they've, you know, the case is busted wide open, and maybe the BB just breaks. Maybe it's truly like a psychotic rage of like, you've ruined everything, you've ruined my plan, I'm going to kill you. Like, that could be a super
That could be a really cool fight, because they're gonna throw everything at you then.
They've got nothing to lose.
You have broken them. What is the quote? A man with nothing to lose is the most dangerous man. Something like that.
Yeah. That could be super interesting. And I think very much like this guy said, you have to make sure you, if it's in the interest of your group, if this is what your group wants to do, you know, you're following the rules as written. A lot of those checks, you know, obviously they have very high DCs. A nat 20 in a ability check is not an auto success. Mm-hmm. A nat 20 on a persuasion check, arcana check, stealth check, performance check, intimidation check. A nat 20 on any ability check is not an auto success. It is, you know, your player is, right, your player is going to do, your player is going to do, you know, the best possible thing that they can do, right? Mm-hmm. If you are rolling a persuasion check and you roll a nat 20, you give the most persuasive argument there is to make. If anything would work, it would be this. Mm-hmm. It still might not work.
Yeah, but the Joker can't be persuaded. Rules as written. You know?
Right. Rules as written, a nat 20 is only an auto success when rolling an attack, when making an attack roll. It's an auto hit. Even if the dragon's armor class is 55 and you roll a nat 20 plus 3, it hits. A nat 20 does hit in that scenario. But, and a lot of people like to think that that works the same on ability checks, and it doesn't. Some people might rule that it does. You know,
we do it a lot.
Very rarely in our group would a nat 20 not succeed in an ability check. Because as a DM, if you're asking someone to roll a dice and a nat 20 isn't a success, you should not have been asking them to roll the dice. Mm-hmm. You should have told them, this is not possible, something that's in the realm of possibility for your character. Because that's not fair. That's not fair to the player to say, oh, yeah, make a persuasion check. And then they roll a nat 20 and you go, yeah, but he doesn't listen anyways. It's like, why'd you make me roll, man? Yeah.
Play this out with me for a second, Keegan. I'm the BBG and you're a player.
Okay.
Oh, Mr. Beckett, you've done it. You've found out my entire dastardly plan. How good for you. Applaud yourself if you must. Do you have anything for me?
Because I shoot him. I cast counterspell at 9th level. I use my reaction to hellish rebuke.
You can throw all that.
That's always what it feels like when you're monologuing, villain monologuing. We've had that. We had a campaign where I did try to do a villain monologue, and a player seconds into it was like, I shoot him with my crossbow, and then I dash, and then I was like, okay, man, damn, like, fuck me, I guess.
Yeah.
I like your train of thought, though. So where were you going with this villain that's been stopped at every corner?
Play it out with me. You're the bad okay. guy. You're Mr. Beckett in this scenario. All
right. I'm Mr. Beckett.
I'm sorry, Mr. Beckett. You've discovered everything there is to discover. You're just one of the brightest and best detectives that have ever lived, I guess.
And now I'm going to stop you.
Well, that is... Unless you don't want to save your mother, and then the mother is falling from the ceiling and giving the villain the time to escape.
He gets away, and then he gets away. Yeah, exactly. I'm gonna be honest. I didn't know where you're going with that. I got a little nervous, but that is a great example of like very much in game how you could play something like that out. There's so many other options, and. Monster of the Week, the Powered by the Apocalypse system, very much inspired by like Supernatural and things like that. Or
it's my favorite. Please play Monster of the Week.
Supernatural.
Stranger Things.
Supernatural.
I said Supernatural. And Stranger Things. It has a system of like soft moves and hard moves that the gamekeeper, the dungeon master, whatever it's called in that system, can enact on the players. And like one of the things, you know, like a hard move that you can do on the player is something that's immediate danger to them is like kidnap a player, separate them from the rest of the party, right? Like it has these options for you to complicate encounters and different things. And you absolutely can take a note from that for fifth edition things. There's always so many routes you could take, plot twists, you know, things you could do to make... Mm. an encounter so much more complicated when the players feel like they have everything figured out.
Yeah. I Monster of the Week, I think especially is very good at giving, like it has a list of things that the DM can use as soft or hard moves. It's very giving in that way of like giving you a spark of an idea of something that could be good. I remember when I was DMing it for you guys, the last monster I gave you was kind of basic. You guys like fucked it up real bad. You figured out what its weakness was, whatever, you researched it good. You're smart about it. And then the next one that I threw at you is, I think, still probably one of my favorite things that I've done as a DM. If you remember correctly, it was the one guy that was sitting in his house and turned into an owl monster. The one of you had like a vision of this guy that would like, this guy in like the vision flashed for a second. And then there was an owl monster in his house. You guys didn't know what was happening. And then when you got there, he's just sitting there watching Jeopardy on his TV or some shit, talking about how much he loved that goddamn stuff. And then like everyone was really confused. And then I was like, oh, the moon peers out and he starts convulsing and growing feathers and growing a beak. And that was when he morphed into the monster.
Transformed. Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
And I remember you guys being like, can we kill it? Like it's this guy that we know.
fuck? Yeah. Yeah. I love like a good, twist like that. And I love the soft and hard moves of Monster of the Week, but Monster of the Week is a much more narrative system. Mm-hmm. It's about telling a story. The rules are simpler and looser and much less abundant than like 5th edition. But you are the dungeon master. And this is a collaborative game where the goal is to have fun and tell a cool story. And you absolutely have the power to pull the same kind of shenanigans that your players are trying to pull on you all the time.
You got a dome up there.
You got to know up there. If they have something clever, you hit them right back. You know, bring in their player backstories. Bring in that NPC that they're very fond of. You know, have a second army that was positioned outside of their hometown that, you know, that the BBG reveals is now marching on their town as this fight is going on. Mm-hmm. And they know that they have to get back to their town to save it as well. You have so many resources at your disposal to complicate their plans just like they've been complicating your plans the whole time.
And it's way, way cooler as a player if your your plan to complicate the bad guy's plan does succeed, but something bad comes from that happening. There's a, I hate to keep bringing up Powered by the Apocalypse, but if
you, but it's so good.
It's so good. It's so good. Everyone should play it at some point. That's my opinion. We'll get. I'm sure we'll talk about it more eventually. but if even if you succeed, even or if you get like a mixed success on something, because there's not just fail succeed. It's complication, mixed success, success. But in every single one of those, a worst choice, a bad outcome, or a price to pay can be enacted by the dungeon master, which makes it so much more interesting.
Right.
So that player can still succeed, but something bad happens because they succeed.
Right. They might, you might, they might say, you know, oh, I want to do this thing, and maybe it's really creative, and maybe it really could, you know, could put a stop to this villain or something. And the DM says, you can do that, but you know, you're going to have to leave your friend behind, mm-hmm. you know, in this dangerous trap. You know, something like that. They can, you can give them this, this very difficult choice where they have to say, oh, I'm going to try to do it anyways. We have to. It feels like the only option, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Or they can back out and be like, I can't do it because
I can't do it. I have to save my friend. It's so cinematic. It's the stakes are so high. It's so anxiety inducing in the best way.
Yeah. I love Powered by the Apocalypse systems.
We have found that we love narrative rules light systems because we're storytellers at heart. We love a good story, and Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition or Dungeons & Dragons 1, whatever we're playing now.
Wow.
We've just found it can be really constrictive. There are so many rules and it just interrupts the flow so often for us. If you love D&D, if your group is a... We played exclusively 5th edition for almost 10 years. So it's not like we're not aware of how it goes. It wasn't until the last couple of years
D&D,
till we branched out.
D&D was my first TTRPG love, and it will always have a good place in me hearts.
Definitely.
I don't know how much I want to play right now.
Not right now. Right now, we're really enjoying some rules light, narrative-focused games. And they give you a lot of freedom to do some really cool stuff like that. Some things that the more crunchy systems you just can't do. Like this guy said, we are the people playing Calvin Ball with rules of Dungeons & Dragons. You know, it's more fun, man. It's more fun. Yeah. But it does require definitely a level of trust in your DM. A level of trust in the players that you're not trying to beat each other or win or ruin anybody's fun. Are working together.
I think that's the hardest thing about D&D is that at some point it always ends up feeling like player versus DM. And I've discovered in these rules light systems that we've been playing that it feels like the DM's more on our side. And that it is very much more collaborative. And in that way, it's a lot more fun.
Yeah. And it's tough. I absolutely understand both sides of it. Because like as a player, you want to absolutely just destroy the boss or the villain, the enemy, right? Like you just want to fuck them up. Mm-hmm. But as the dungeon master, who's like maybe even, you know, made this stat block for this monster or found a cool monster encounter and planned it all out, you want to get to do all your cool actions and legendary actions and lair actions, like all this stuff that you've prepared. And so you don't want the players to just, you know, one shot it, right? So it's like this dichotomy of like, you know, you're not, even if you're not working against the players, you're not trying to TPK, you're not trying to do anything, you know, you're letting the dice roll how they roll.
Yeah.
But like, you want to have fun as the DM too. And you, as the DM, you want to have fun and you want to get to do your cool stuff as well. So it's kind of, it's a tough balance.
Yeah. I have to agree with that. All right.
Wow, we took that question up, down, around the corner. That was all over the place.
We wrapped it around. It's now taffy. I flavored it
a
little bit. But
I think we got to some cool stuff. I do think we flavored it with a little bit of role play.
A little role play.
I think that's accurate. But I think we got to some really cool stuff in there.
I agree.
Some good conversation. All right, Jake, lead us out. What do you got?
I got a plug. Show us I got the way. Plug North. Jeez, Northwood Project. It's our other podcast. It is a horror anthology. Northwood Project, very good.
Much higher production value. This we're just kind of, you know, we're a couple of talking the shit about tabletop RPGs. That one's it's fully scripted, audio edited, background music, sound effects. It's the whole bit, man.
Yeah, it takes a long time to make, but it is super super cool. If you guys, if anyone has any questions that they would like to ask us directly, email is in the description.
Or if you just have a funny tabletop RPG story, a good anything story. You want to share. Maybe a counter argument. Maybe we said something and you're like, you guys are wrong. You're idiots. And this is how it should go. Send us that too.
I'd love to hear about fucking it. Dare you to do that. I fucking dare you. Challenge me on my own goddamn podcast. I love it.
I love it.
But yeah, send us an email if you have anything. Shoot us a like, rate us 5 stars, do all that good stuff. Spread the word. Tell your significant others. I don't know. Your dog.
Everybody, man. Tell your grandma. Maybe your grandma wants to hear some tabletop RPG hot takes.
I'm sorry, Keegan. No one's grandma wants to listen to me yell at you.
You don't know
that. I curse at you. They're going to be like, oh, no, he's saying unholy words.
No, there are some cool grandmas out there that are cursing like sailors and playing
D&D. That's true.
And they need this podcast, Jake. They need
My grandma doesn't curse like a sailor.
Mine doesn't either, but
no, mine does. Actually, that's not true. I have
heard my podcast.
I have both sides. One of my grandmas will curse like a sailor. The other one of my grandmas, I've never heard her curse.
I've never cursed in front of my grandma. She'd be very upset with me.
I cursed in front of the one grandma that doesn't curse before. Apparently, after she went home, she called my mom.
Oh my god. All right, we've been the Gelatinous Dudes. I'm Keegan. This is my buddy Jake. We did not even say our names at the beginning.
Who cares?
But now you know it's at the end. This has been a lot of fun. Can't wait to come back next week and talk about some hot off the press tabletop RPG stuff. Thanks for listening. We really appreciate it. We're doing this for you. We're really doing it for us. We have so much fun. But
I know.
We're also making it for you two out there that are listening.
The greatest thing
send
is
us
that
an email.
If we weren't recording this, we would still be talking about this.
It's true. We kind of did this. That's why we did this, is we did this already before. We were sitting in here, shooting the shit, talking about tabletop RPGs, and we had some good takes, and we're like, we need to put this out there, man. This is good stuff.
I don't know how good our takes are. That's not true. We got some fucking fantastic takes.
Hey, we play D&D every week. We have a lot of fun. Our games are consistent. We've played for years. Clearly, we're doing something right, man.
We gotta be, I think.
All right. We've been the Gelatinous Dudes. We'll see you next week.
Bye! Bye.